If a bird, an unusually intelligent bird, had looked down on the quarry in the next few seconds, it would have thought, "Oh, there's a wide hole in the hill, with little old rusty sheds in it, and a fence in front of it. And there's a car with a blue light on the top of it, just going through a gate in the fence. And there are little black dots on the ground ahead of it, one dot standing very still, right in the path of the thing. And the others... breaking away and running. Running for their lives. They never did find Nisodemus again. Even though a party of strong-stomached gnomes went back much later and searched through the ruts and the mud. Humans clumped slowly around the train and what remained of the truck. Lots of other vehicles had turned up at what was, for humans, great speed. Many of them had blue lights on top. The Land Rover belonging to the quarrymen was there as well. One of the quarrymen was pointing to the wrecked truck and shouting at the others. He'd opened the smashed engine compartment and was pointing to where the battery wasn't. Beside the railway, the breeze rustled the long grass. And some of the long grass rustled without any wind at all. Dorcas had been right. Where humans went once, they went again. The quarry belonged to them. Three trucks were parked outside the sheds, and humans were everywhere. Some were repairing the fence, some were taking boxes and drums off the lorries. One was even in the manager's office tidying up. The gnomes crouched where they could, listening fearfully to the sounds above them. There weren't many hiding places for 2,000 gnomes, small though they were. It was a very long day. The gnomes sat in the darkness, not daring even to speak, and felt their world vanishing. There was Dorcas's electricity, for example. He'd spent a long time twisting bits of wire together and finding a safe way to steal electricity from the fuse box. A human pulled them out without thinking, twiddled inside with a screwdriver, and put up a new box with a lock on it. Then it mended the telephone. The store gnomes needed electricity. They couldn't remember a time when they'd been without it. It was a natural thing, like air. And now theirs was a world of endless darkness. And still the terror went on. The rough floorboards shook overhead, raining dust and splinters. Metal drums boomed like thunder. There was the continual sound of hammering. The humans were back, and they meant to stay. They did go eventually, though. When the daylight drained from the winter sky, like steel growing cold, some of the humans got into their vehicles and drove off down the lane. They did one puzzling thing before they left. One of the floorboards in the manager's office was pulled up. A huge hand reached down and put a little tray on the packed earth under the floor. Then the darkness came back as the board was replaced. The tray was piled with flour. It wasn't much compared to store food, but to gnomes who had spent all day hungry and miserable, it smelt good. A couple of younger ones crawled closer. Oh, it was the most tantalizing smell. One of them took a handful of the stuff. "Don't eat it!" Grimmer pushed her way through the packed bodies. "But it smells so..." "Have you ever smelt anything like it before?" she said. "Well, no, so you don't know it's good to eat, do you? Listen, I know about stuff like this. Where I used to live, in the hole, there was a place along the road where humans came to eat, and sometimes we'd find stuff like this among the rubbish bins at the back. It kills you if you eat it. We used to find dead rats near it. They didn't die in a very nice way," she added. "Oh." The gnomes stared at the tray again, and there was a thump from overhead. There was still a human in the quarry. It was sitting in the old swivel chair in the manager's office reading a paper. From a knothole near the floor, the gnomes watched carefully. There were huge boots, great sweeps of trouser, a mountain range of jacket, and far above, the distant gleam of electric light on a bald head. After a long while, the human put the paper down and reached over to the desk by its side. The watching gnomes gazed at a pack of sandwiches bigger than they were, and a thermos flask that steamed when it was opened and filled the hut with the smell of soup. They climbed back down and reported to Grimmer. She was sitting by the food tray and had ordered 6 of the older and more sensible gnomes to stand guard around it to keep children away. "He's not doing anything," she was told. "He's just sitting there. We saw him look out of the window once or twice." "Then he'll be here all night," said Grimmer. "I expect the humans are wondering who's causing all this trouble. What shall we do?" Grimmer sat with her chin on her hands. "There's those big old tumble-down sheds across the quarry," she said at last. "We could go there." Dorcas used to say it was very dangerous in the old sheds," said a gnome cautiously, "because of all the old junk and stuff." "Very dangerous," he said. "More dangerous than here," said Grimmer. "Oh, you've got a point." "Please'm." It was one of the younger female gnomes. They held Grimmer in awe because of the way she shouted at the men and read better than anyone. This one held a baby in her arms and kept curtsying every time she finished a sentence. "What is it, Sorrit?" said Grimmer.
"Please, mum, some of the children are very hungry, mum. There isn't anything wholesome to eat down here, you see."
Grimmer nodded. The stores were under the other sheds, what was left of them. The main potato store had been found by some of the humans, which was perhaps why the poison had been put down. Anyway, they couldn't light a fire, and there was no meat. No one had been doing any proper hunting for days, because Arnold Brothers Est-1905 would provide, according to Nicodemus. "As soon as it gets light, I think all the hunters we can spare should go out," said Grimmer. "There's plenty of snow," said a gnome. "That means we've got water." "We might be able to manage without food, but the children won't," said Grimmer.
"And the old people, too," said a gnome. "It's going to freeze again tonight. We haven't got the electric, and we can't light a fire outside."
They sat staring glumly at the dirt. What Grimmer was thinking was, "They're not bickering. They're not grumbling. Things are so serious, they're actually not arguing and blaming each other." "All right," she said. "And what do you all think we should do?" The human lowered its newspaper and listened. There was a rustling in the walls. There was a scratching under the floor. Its eyes swiveled to the table beside it. A group of small creatures were dragging its packet of sandwiches across the tabletop. It blinked. Then it roared and tried to stand up. And it wasn't until it was nearly upright that it found that its feet were tied very firmly to the legs of its chair. It crashed forward. A crowd of tiny creatures, moving so fast that it could hardly see them, charged out from under the table and wrapped a length of old electricity wire around its outflung arms. Within seconds, it was trussed awkwardly but very firmly between the furniture. They saw its great eyes roll. It opened its mouth and mooed at them. Teeth like yellow plates clashed at them. The wire held. The sandwiches turned out to be cheese and chutney. "Store food," the gnomes told one another. "Good store food, like we used to know." They poured into the room from every crack and mouse hole. There was an electric fire by the table, and they sat in solemn rows in front of its glowing red bar, or wandered around the cramped office.
"We done it," they said, "just like that Gullible Travels. The bigger they come, the harder they fall."
Grimmer wandered over to where the human lay. It was well trussed up by now and couldn't move a finger. It looked just like the picture of Gullible or whoever he was, except the gnomes had got hold of what the gnomes in those days had never heard of, which was lots of electric wire. It was a lot tougher than rope. They'd gone through its pockets and piled up the contents in a heap. There'd been a big square of white cloth amongst them, which a group of gnomes had managed to tie around the human's mouth after its mooing got on everyone's nerves. Now they stood around eating fragments of sandwich and watching its eyes. Humans can't understand gnomes. Their voices are too fast and too high, like a bat squeak. It was probably just as well.
"I say we should find something sharp and stick it into it," said a gnome, "in all the soft bits." "There's things we could do with matches," said a lady gnome. "And nails," said a middle-aged gnome.
The human growled behind its gag and strained at the wires.
"We could pull all its hair out," said the lady gnome, "and then we could..."
"Do it then," said Grimmer, coming up behind them. They turned.
"What?"
Do it, if you want to, said Grimmer. There it is, right in front of you. Do what you like.
What, me? The lady gnome drew back. I didn't... Not me. I didn't mean me. I meant, well, us. Gnome kind.
There you are, then, said Grimmer. And gnome kind is only gnomes. Besides, it's wrong to hurt prisoners. When you've got people at your mercy, you shouldn't hurt them.
Seems like the ideal time to me, said a gnome. Hit them when they can't hit back, that's what I say. Anyway, it's not as if humans are the same as real people.
But he shuffled backwards anyway.
Funny, though, when you see their faces close to, said the lady gnome, putting her head on one side, they look a lot like us, only bigger.
One of the gnomes peered into the human's frightened eyes.
Hasn't it got a hairy nose? And ears, too. Quite gross, said the lady. You could almost feel sorry for them with great big noses like that.
Grimmer stared into the human's eyes.
I wonder, she thought. They're bigger than us, so there must be room for brains.
And they've got great big eyes. Surely they must have seen us once. Masklin said we've been here for thousands of years. In all that time, humans must have seen us. They must have known we were real people. But in their minds, they turned us into pixies.
Perhaps they didn't want to share the world.
Grimmer, you ought to see this, Grimmer, said a voice behind her.
The gnomes were clustered around a white heap on the floor.
Oh, yes. The human had been looking at one of those big sheets of paper.
The gnomes had spread it out flat on the floor. It looked a lot like the first one they'd seen, except this one was called Read It First in Your Soraway Blackberry Evening Post and Gazette. It had more of the great blocky writing, some of the letters nearly as big as a gnome's head.
This is the bit, said one of the gnomes. This page here. Look, some of the words, they're the same as last time. Look, it's about Grandson 39.
There was indeed a fuzzy picture of Grandson 39 under the words TV in the Sky Hitch. She knelt down and stared at the smaller words below it.
Read it aloud, they said.
Richard Arnold, the Blackberry-based chairman of the Arnco Group, said in Florida Today that scientists are still trying to regain control of ArnSat-1, the multi-million pound communication satellite. The gnomes looked at one another.
Multi-million pound, they said. That's really heavy.
Hopes were high after yesterday's successful lunch in Florida, Grimmer read uncertainly, that ArnSat-1 would begin test transmissions today. Instead, it is sending a stream of strange signals. It's like some sort of code, said Richard 39. It's as if it had a mind of its own, Grimmer read. She remembered the way Masklin had talked about the stars and why they stayed up. And there was the thing. He'd taken it with him. The thing could talk to electricity, couldn't it? It could listen to the electricity in wires and the stuff in the air that Dorcas called radio. If anything could send strange signals, the thing could.
They're alive, she said to no one in particular. Masklin and Gerda and Angelo. They've got to the Florida place and they're alive.
The gnomes exchanged meaningful glances, and the kind of meaning they were full of was, she's fooling herself, but it'd take a braver gnome than me to tell her. Granny Morky patted her gently on the shoulder.
Yes, yes, she said soothingly, and thank goodness they had a successful lunch. I bet they needed to get some food inside them, and if I was you, my girl, I'd get some sleep.
Grimmer dreamed. It was a confused dream. Dreams nearly always are. They don't come neatly packaged. She dreamt of loud noises and flashing lights and eyes. Little yellow eyes. And Masklin standing on a branch, climbing through leaves, peering down at little yellow eyes.
I'm seeing what he's doing now, she thought. He's alive. I always knew he was, of course. But outer space has got more leaves than I thought. Or perhaps none of it's real and I'm just dreaming.
Then someone woke her up. It snowed again in the night, on an icy wind. Some of the gnomes scouted around the sheds and came back with a few vegetables, but it was a pitifully small amount. The tied-up human went to sleep after a while, and snored like someone sawing a thick log with a thin saw. "The others will be coming looking for it in the morning," Grimmer warned. "We mustn't be here then. Perhaps we should..." She stopped. They all listened. Something was moving around under the floorboards. It turned out to be Sacco. They dragged aside the floorboard the humans had loosened and helped him up. He was covered in mud and swaying with exhaustion. "I couldn't find anyone," he gasped. "I looked everywhere and couldn't find anyone. And we saw the trucks come here, and I saw the lights on, and I thought the humans were still here, and I came in, and I heard your voices, and you've got to come because it's Dorcas." "He's alive," said Grimmer. "If he isn't, he can swear pretty well for a dead person." "We thought you were all dead," Grimmer began. "We're all fine, except for Dorcas. He hurt himself jumping out of the lorry. Come on, please!" "You don't look in any state to go anywhere," said Grimmer. She stood up. "You just tell us where he is." "We got him halfway up the lane, and we got so tired, and I left them and came on ahead. They're under the hedge, and..." He fell forwards. Grimmer caught him and laid him down as gently as she could. "Put him somewhere warm and see if there's any food left," she said to the gnomes in general. "And I want some of you to help me look for the others. Come on. This isn't a night for being outside." The expression on the faces of some of the gnomes said that they definitely agreed with this point of view, and that among the people who shouldn't be out on a night like this was themselves. "We'll never find them in all the dark and snow," said one of them uncertainly. Grimmer glared at him. "We might," she said. "We might find them in all the dark and snow. We won't find them by staying in the light and warm. I know that much." Several gnomes pushed their way forwards. Grimmer recognised Nuti's people and the parents of some of the lads. Then there was a bit of a commotion from under the table, where the oldest gnomes were clustering together to keep warm and have a good moan. "I'm coming too," said Granny Morky. "Do me good to have a drop of fresh air. What are you all looking at me like that for?" "I think you ought to stay inside, Granny," said Grimmer gently. "Don't you come to being tactful to old people to me, my girl," said Granny, prodding her with her stick. "I've been out in deep snow before you was even thought of." She turned to the rest of the gnomes. "Nothing to it if you act sensible and keeps yelling out so everyone knows where everyone is. I went out to help look for my Uncle Joe before I was a year old," she said proudly. "Dreadful snow that was. It come down sudden-like when the men were out hunting. We found nearly all of him, too." In the end, 15 of them went. The store gnomes really hated the snow. It was already as deep as their knees. "What you do is," said Granny Morky, "you lift your feet up really high and plonk them down, nothing to it." "And spread out," said Grimmer, "but keep together." "Spread out and keep together," they muttered. A senior gnome put his hand up. "You don't get robins at night, do you?" he asked cautiously. "No, of course not," said Grimmer. "No, you don't get robins at night, daft," said Granny Morky. They looked relieved. "You get foxes," Granny added. "Great big foxes. They get good and hungry in the cold weather, and maybe you get owls." She scratched her chin. "Cunning devil's owls. You never hear 'em till they're on top of you." She banged on the wall with her stick. "Look sharp, you lot, best foot forward, unless you like my Uncle Joe. A fox got his best foot. He had to have a wooden leg. He was livid." There was something about Granny Morky cheering people up that always got them moving. Anything was better than being cheered up some more. Stumbling along, they prodded the snowy tussocks and peered doubtfully into the gloomy holes under the hedge, while the flakes continued to fall in a soft, crackly silence. Robins, owls, and other terrors of the outside lurked in every shadow. Sometimes one of them would call out softly, and then they'd all listen. It was very cold. Granny Morky stopped suddenly. "Fox," she announced. "I can smell it. Can't mistake a fox. Rank." They huddled together and stared apprehensively into the darkness. "Might not still be around, mind," said Granny.
Hangs around for a long time, that smell.
They relaxed a bit.
We're doing this wrong, said Grimmer. It's Dorcas we're looking for. He wouldn't just be sitting out in the open, would he? He knows about foxes. He'd get the boys to find somewhere sheltered and as safe as possible.
Newt's father stepped forward.
If you look the way the snow falls, he said hesitantly, you can see the air conditioning is blowing it this way, he pointed. So it piles up more on this side of things than that side. So they'd want to be as much away from the air conditioning as possible, wouldn't they?
It's called the wind when it's outside, said Grimmer gently. But you're right. That means, she stared at the hedges, they'd be on the other side of the hedge, in the field, up against the bank. Come on!
They scrambled up through the mass of dead leaves and dripping twigs and into the field beyond. It was desolate. A few tufts of dead grass stuck above the endless wilderness of snow.
Stick close to the hedge, Grimmer said, more cheerfully than she felt. There's not so much snow there.
Oh, Arnold Brothers, S1905, she thought. Dorcas doesn't believe in you, and I certainly don't believe in you. But if you could just see your way clear to existing just long enough for us to find them, we'd all appreciate it very much.
She realized that she was staring at the snow.
Was there a hole in it, she thought.
Rabbits, I thought, she said.
Dorcas patted her hand.
Well done, he said weakly.
We were in the lane after Sacco left, said Newty, and it was getting really cold, and Dorcas said to take him the other side of the hedge. And, well, it was me who said you can see rabbits in this field sometimes, and he said find a rabbit hole, so we did. We thought we'd be here all night.
Ow, moaned Dorcas.
Don't make a fuss, I didn't hurt a bit,
said Granny Morky cheerfully as she examined his leg. Nothing broken, but it's a nasty sprain.
The Stornomes looked around the burrow with interest and a certain amount of approval. It was nicely closed in. Your ancestors probably lived in holes like this, said Grimmer.
Very nice, said a gnome. Homely, almost like being under the floor.
We must get back, said Dorcas firmly. This snow isn't just going to go away, is it? I can get along okay if I've got someone to lean on.
We can make you a stretcher, said Grimmer. Though goodness knows there isn't much to get back to.
The snow was still falling outside, but raggedy fashion, as if the last flakes in stock were being sold off cheaply. There was a line of red light in the east, not the dawn, but the promise of the dawn. It didn't look cheerful. When the sun did rise, it would find itself locked behind bars of cloud. They broke off some pieces of dead cow parsley stalk to make a rough sort of chair for Dorcas, which four gnomes could carry. It must be great to be a human, Grimmer thought, as thorns the length of her hand tore at her dress. Masculine was right. This really is their world. It's the right size for them. We think we do things for ourselves, and all we do is live in odd corners of their world, under their floors, stealing things. The other gnomes trudged along in weary silence. The only sound, apart from the crunch of feet on snow and leaves, was of Granny Morky eating. She'd found some hawthorn berries on a bush and was chewing her way through one with every sign of enjoyment. She'd offered them around, but the other gnomes found them bitter and unpleasant.
Probably an acquired taste, she muttered.
It's one we're all going to have to acquire, thought Grimmer. The only hope we've got is to split up and leave the quarry in little groups once we get back. Move out into the country, go back to living in old rabbit holes and eating whatever we can find. Some groups may survive the winter once the old people have died off. And it'll be goodbye to electricity, goodbye reading, goodbye bananas. But I'll wait at the quarry until Masklin comes back.
Cheer up, my girl, said Granny Morky, trying to be friendly. Don't look so gloomy, it may never happen, that's what I always say.
Even Granny was shocked when Grimmer looked at her with a face from which all the colour had drained away. Then she folded up very gently and collapsed to her knees and started to sob.
All I did was try and cheer her up, mumbled Granny Morky.
The gnomes stood around in a circle. No one dared go near Grimmer. If you tried to pat her on the shoulder and say, there, there, anything might happen. She might bite your hand off or anything. Dorcas eased himself up off his makeshift carrier. He limped over to Grimmer,
catching hold of a thorn twig to steady himself. "You found us. We're going back to the quarry. Everything's all right," he said soothingly.
"It isn't. We'll have to move on," she sobbed. "You'd have been better off staying in the hole. It's all gone wrong."
"Well, I would have said," Dorcas began.
"We've got no food, and we can't stop the humans, and we're trapped in the quarry, and I've tried to keep everyone together, and now it's all gone wrong. We might as well give up right now. We might as well give up and die right here."
There was a horrified silence. It was broken by Dorcas. He said, "Are you sure? Are you really sure?" The tone of his voice made Grimmer look up. All the gnomes were staring. There was a fox looking down at them. It was one of those moments when time itself freezes solid. Grimmer could see the yellow-green glow in the fox's eyes and the cloud of its breath. Its tongue lolled out. The gnomes stood rooted in terror. There was no sense in trying to run away. A fox had twice as many legs to run after you. You'd end up dead anyway. But at least you wouldn't end up dead and out of breath as well. There was a growl. To the gnome's astonishment, it had come from Grimmer. She snatched Granny Morky's walking stick, strode forward, and whacked the fox across the nose before it could move. It yelped and blinked stupidly. "Push off!" she shouted. "How dare you come here!" She hit it again. It jerked its head away. Grimmer took another step forward and caught it a backward thump across the muzzle. The fox made up its mind. There were definitely rabbits further down the hedge. Rabbits didn't hit back. It whined, backed away with its eyes fixed on Grimmer, and then darted off into the darkness. The gnomes breathed out.
"Well," said Dorcas.
"I'm sorry, but I just can't stand foxes," said Grimmer, "and Masklin said we should let them know who's boss."
"I'm not arguing," said Dorcas.
Grimmer looked vaguely at the stick.
What was I saying before that?" "You were saying we might as well give up and die right here," said Granny Morky helpfully.
Grimmer glared at her.
"No, I wasn't," she said. "I was just feeling a bit tired, that's all. Come on, we'll catch our death standing here."
Overhead, quite unnoticed by the gnomes, a rather strangely bright star zigzagged across the sky. It was small. Or perhaps it was very big, but a long way off. If you looked at it long enough, it might just have appeared disc-shaped. It was causing a lot of messages to be sent through the air all around the world. It seemed to be looking for something. There were flickering lights in the quarry by the time they got back. Another group of gnomes was about to set out to look for them. The cheer that went up when it was realized that everyone was safely back almost made Grimmer forget that they were safely back to a very unsafe place. She'd read something in a book of proverbs that summed it up perfectly. As far as she could remember, it was something about jumping out of the thing you cook in and into the thing you cooked on, or something. Grimmer led the rescue party into the office and listened while Sacco recounted the adventures from the time Dorcas, out of sudden terror, had jumped out of the truck and had been carried off the rails just before the train arrived.
"It wasn't as bad as it looked," Sacco said. "I mean, the truck was smashed, but the train didn't even come off the rails." "We saw it all," he finished. "I'm starving."
He gave them a bright smile, which faded like a sunset.
"There's no food?"
"Even less than that," said a gnome. "If you've got some bread, we could make a snow sandwich."
Sacco thought about this.
"There's rabbits," he said. "There were rabbits in the field."
"And in the dark," said Dorcas, who appeared to have something on his mind.
"Well, yes,"
admitted Sacco.
"And with that fox hanging about," said Newty.
Another proverb floated up in Grimmer's mind.
"Needs must," she said, "when the devil drives."
Dorcas coughed.
"All right," he said quietly.
Something about the way he said it made them pay attention.
"You'd all better come with me," he went on. "Believe me, I'd rather you didn't have to."
"Where to?" said Grimmer.
"The old sheds, the ones by the cliff," said Dorcas.
"But they're all tumbled down, and you said they were very dangerous."
"Oh, they are, they are. There's piles of junk and stuff in tins the children shouldn't touch and stuff like that."
He twiddled his beard nervously. But, he said, there's something else. Something I've been working on, sort of. Something you ought to know about. A snore from the human shook the office. Besides, I don't like being so close to that thing. There was a general murmur of agreement about this.
Had you thought about what you're going to do with it? Said Dorcas.
Some people wanted to kill it, but I don't think that's a good idea, said Grimmer. I think the other humans would get really upset about it.
Besides, it doesn't seem right, said Dorcas.
We'll leave it, she said, but is there any paper here?
Loads of it on the desk, said Nootie.
Go and fetch some, please. Dorcas, you've always got something to write with, haven't you? Dorcas fumbled in his pockets until he found a stub of pencil lead. Nootie came back towing a yellowing sheet of paper. At the top of it, in heavy black lettering, were the words Blackberry Sand and Gravel PLC. Below that was the word Invoice. Grimmer thought for a while, and then licked the stub, and in big letters started to write.
What are you doing? Said Dorcas.
Trying to communicate, said Grimmer. She carefully traced another word, pressing quite hard.
I've always thought it might be worth trying, said Dorcas. But is this the right time?
Yes, said Grimmer. She finished the last word.
What do you think? She said, handing Dorcas the pencil lead.
The writing was a bit jagged, and her grasp of grammar and writing wasn't as good as her skill at reading, but it was clear enough.
Dorcas put his head on one side.
Well, it's definitely a communication. You can't get much more communicating than that.
Yes.
Grimmer tried to sound cheerful. And now, let's see this shed of yours.
2 minutes later, the office shed was empty of gnomes. The human snored on the floor, one hand outstretched. There was a piece of paper in it now. It said, Blackberry Sand and Gravel PLC. It said, Invoice. It said, We could have killed you. Leave us alone.
Now it was quite light outside, and the snow had stopped.
They'll see our tracks, said Sacco. Even humans will notice this many tracks.
It don't matter, said Dorcas. Just get everyone into the old sheds.
Are you sure, Dorcas? Said Grimmer. Are you really sure this is a good idea?
No. They joined the stream of gnomes hurrying through a crack in the crumbling corrugated iron and entered the vast echoing chamber of the shed. Grimmer looked around her. Rust and time had eaten large holes in the walls and ceiling. Old tins and coils of wire were stacked willy-nilly in the corners, along with odd-shaped bits of metal and jam jars with nails in them. Everything stank of oil.
"What's the thing we ought to know about?" she said.
Dorcas pointed to the shadows at the far end of the shed, where she could just make out something big and indistinct.
"It just looks like some sort of big cloth," she said.
"It's underneath it. Is everyone in?" Dorcas cupped his hands around his mouth.
"Is everyone in?"
he shouted. He turned to Nootie. "I need to know where everyone is," he said. "I don't want anyone to be frightened, but I don't want unnecessary people getting in the way."
"Unnecessary for what?" said Grimmer, but he ignored her.
"Sacco, you take some of the lads and get those things we put in the hedge," said Dorcas. "We'll definitely need the battery, and I'm really not certain how much fuel there is."
"Dorcas, what is it?" said Grimmer, tapping her foot.
He looked down at his feet. "You'd better come and see. I shall need you to explain things to everyone. You're so much better at that sort of thing." Grimmer followed him across the chilly floor as more gnomes filed into the shed and huddled apprehensively along the walls. He led her under the shadow of the tarpaulin, which formed a sort of big, dusty cave. A tyre, like a truck's, loomed up a little way away in the gloom, but it was far more knobbly than any she'd seen.
"Oh, it's just a truck," she said uncertainly. "You've got a truck in here, haven't you?"
Dorcas said nothing. He just pointed upwards. Grimmer looked up, and then looked up some more, into the mouth of Jacob.
Sometimes words need music, too.
Sometimes the descriptions aren't enough. Books should be written with soundtracks, like films. Something deep on an organ, perhaps. Grimmer stared. Da-da! It can't really be alive, she thought desperately. It's not really about to bite me. Dorcas wouldn't have brought me in here if he knew there was a monster about to bite me. I'm not going to be frightened. I'm not frightened at all. I'm a thinking gnome, and I'm not frightened. I think the knobbly wheels are just to make it grip the ground better, said Dorcas, his voice sounding a long way off. Now, I've had a good look around it, and, you know, there's nothing really wrong with it. It's just very old. Grimmer's gaze travelled along the huge yellow neck. Then I thought, I'm sure he could be started up. These diesel engines are quite easy, really. And, of course, there were pictures in one of the books, although I'm not sure about these pipes, hydraulics, I think it's called. But there was this book on one of the benches, Workshop Manual, and I've put grease on things and tidied it up. And I've been up and looked at the controls, and, you know, it's probably easier than the truck was, only, of course, there's these extra levers for the hydraulics, but that shouldn't be a problem if there's enough fuel, which...
He stopped, aware of her silence. Is there something the matter?
What is it? Said Grimmer.
I was just telling you, said Dorcas. It's fascinating. You see, these pipes pump some sort of stuff which makes those bits up there move, and those pistons are forced out, which makes the arm thing over there...
I didn't ask you what it does. I asked you what it is.
Didn't I say? Said Dorcas innocently. Well, there's its name painted on it, just up there, look.
She looked where he pointed. Her brow wrinkled.
J.C.B. J.C.B. Jacob. What sort of name's that?
I don't know. I'm not a good man at names. Anyway, it sounds right. Come over this side.
She followed him dreamily, and once more stared into the darkness under the tarpaulin.
There, he said. There's no mistaking what they are, I hope.
Oh, my, said Grimmer, and raised her hand to her mouth.
Yep, said Dorcas. That's what I thought when I first found this. I thought, oh, it's a sort of truck. Well, well. And then I walked up here, and I found it was a truck with,
teeth, said Grimmer softly. Great big metal teeth.
That's right, said Dorcas proudly. Jacob, a sort of truck. A truck with teeth.
Does it work? Said Grimmer.
It should do, it should do. I've tested what I can. Basic principle is like a truck, but there's lots of extra levers and things. Why didn't you tell me about this before?
Grimmer demanded.
Dunno. Course I didn't have to, I suppose, said Dorcas. But it's huge! You can't keep something like this to yourself.
Everyone has to have something they can keep to themselves, said Dorcas vaguely. Anyway, size isn't important. It's just so, well, so perfect.
Dorcas patted a knobbly tyre. You know you once said humans think someone made the world in a week. When I saw Jacob for the first time, I thought, okay, this is what he used. He stared up into the shadows.
First thing we've got to do is get the tarpaulin off, he said. It'll be very heavy, so we'll need lots of people. You'd better warn them. Jacob can be a bit scary when you see him for the first time.
Didn't frighten me a bit, said Grimmer.
Oh, no, said Dorcas. I was watching your face.
That is the end of this side.